I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. Calling all lovers of mystery. Prepare to don your detective hat in June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective who is on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. Take a trip in time to the glitzy 20s to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. If, like me, you get sad when a story comes to a close, never fear. With June's Journey, the thrill is endless, since new chapters are added weekly. And not only can you enjoy the detective adventure, but you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island, where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Her body's just kind of going all over the place. And I'm like, this is very, is this why people like it? I know.
It's camp.
Nothing can contain her. Nothing. Not that little like towel that she has tucked into her tracksuit that she runs in. Right. Not the street, not the shrub. She said, I'm fucking out here and this is me. Welcome to me.
I'm diking out, you're diking out. Let's dike out together. See what it's all about.
Hi, and welcome to Diking Out, a podcast that can't resist the siren's call. I'm Carolyn Bergier.
I'm Melody Kamali, and today we're diking out with lawyer, activist, and mentor Whit Washington about mature women.
Guess who suggested this topic? Actually, not me.
Yeah, surprisingly, Whit.
But did pick it from the list of topics. Okay, quick announcement. This Thursday, we do have a show. It's our glorious return to Stonewall, but it's not diking out at Stonewall. It's Lesbian Bar Project. We are doing a fundraiser. It is their second round of fundraising to help keep these lesbian bars up and running. And it's the last day of that round of fundraising. So we're having a big night of comedy. Tickets are $35 and it benefits the Lesbian Bar Project. It includes two Jaeger cocktails. You have to be vaccinated to come. Look to our Instagram for the link and the lineup. We've got Allie Clayton.
I know her.
Jess Henderson.
Yes.
You know her. And you, I mean, the U-Haulers. Yeah.
Yeah.
You love her. You know her. We have Sabrina Wu, past guest of the podcast. And we also have
Ashley Gavin.
You definitely know Ashley Gavin. Wow. What a stocked lineup. And if that wasn't enough, we are having a musical performance by the one and only Sir Baby Girl. I am always so pumped when Sir Baby Girl is available to do one of our shows, because they always bring it. They've been working on some new music. I don't know what they're going to do. It's always a surprise. It's always amazing. Gay-mazing. It's going to be such a fun time. So if you're around, if you're in New York Thursday, July 1st at Stonewall to save the lesbian bars. Oh, and we're hosting, of course.
Oh, we'll be there.
Yeah, we'll be there too. We'll be about out and about, being very gay and mingling like we were last night, yesterday.
Last night, all damn month.
Yes, which makes this question of what's the gayest thing a little bit tricky. So I think we should talk about the bigger gay things of yesterday. And then if there is one gem that was particularly gay, we can tease that out. But okay. I'll let you start, Melody, because...
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Where do I start?
If you follow Melody on Instagram, which you should be doing, you got a little peek into her wild ride.
Got on a motorcycle for the first time in my life. Thank you, Sirens Motorcycle Club. I'm obsessed with you. I want to take lessons with you. As we know from my gayest thing a few weeks back, I won a raffled off spot on the back of a motorcycle. I rode with the president of the motorcycle club, Sheila.
Sheila.
The best experience. Yeah.
I don't know why I think that's funny, but Sheila definitely sounds like a dyke on a bike.
Yes. She was so much fun. She had her music hooked up, like a little speaker on the bike.
I didn't know until after our show last night. I didn't see your pictures or anything because I didn't really have my phone on me much yesterday, and that you had like a little mic connected. So you two were like communicating the whole time. That's so funny.
Yeah. I mean... Actually, we were screaming over the motor, too. I don't know if that worked. That's why my voice is a hoarse right now. I've also, you know, been out all night at a circuit party. That's gay as hell,
right,
too. Yeah, wow. I had so much fun.
I love that you're ready to become a biker after being on the back of a bike going 5 miles an hour down Fifth Avenue.
Maybe two. Yeah, 2 miles. I clutched onto Sheila when we took off and I was like, oh, this is not necessary.
Yeah. You're like a full-on biker, dyke slash bike, a bike now.
Bike. I'm bike squared now and
yes.
I wouldn't have it any other way. It was really funny. I could only ride half of the dyke march. I had to hop off halfway and go to Good Judy for our show.
Right.
But when I got off, it was when everyone was getting off. They stopped halfway through for a moment of silence for those who we've lost. The theme of this year's Dyke March was Black Dyke Power. So everyone was off the bikes. And then after that, there's a little pause. I got to meet some of the other members of the motorcycle club. And one of them came up to me and introduced herself and was like, hey, are you friends or family? Like, who do you know in the club? I was like, oh, no, I just won this at a raffle. And she's like, you're kidding. The way you've been dancing and flailing your arms on this, the energy you're bringing, I just assumed you must be related to someone in the club. Like, I made myself so at home on the back of that bike that...
Yes, like, you did look like you were having fun from the pictures. I was dying. I loved it. You looked so happy.
Blissed out.
Like, yeah.
best day of my life, truly. I thank you, Dyke March. Thank you, Sirens Motorcycle Club. Oh my God. Is that the gayest thing?
I think now that's going to be like the hottest ticket at the raffle next year. You've really talked it up. Yeah. And it's going to be a lot harder to get that coveted spot next time. But maybe next time you'll be the bike on a bike.
Hell yeah. I'm going to take
someone
lessons.
Riding on your back.
I have a whole new personality now.
Yeah. You showed up in all leather at the show last night. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. The theme was Black Dyke Power, which Cecilia didn't know. And as we were riding to the Dyke March on the subway, I said, "You do know the theme is Black Dyke Power." And she's like, "Oh, no, I didn't know." And the shirt she was wearing was the Golden Girls dressed as a bunch of like leather dykes. I'm like, "You're wearing a shirt with four old white women to the Black Dyke Power."
She's like, "I'm repping the next episode's theme."
Right, exactly. It all was serendipitous. It worked out. Yeah, the Dyke March was great from start to finish, at least the finish point for me. Right at the beginning, I ran into a listener, Camille, from anybody who was on our virtual Halloween show that we did, You Halloween. There was a little game component during Tian Tran's set, and Camille won, and Camille was on a date. It was a virtual date through the show. It was awesome. And I ran into her in person. It's just so cool to see people who like don't live in the city and then just find you. And they're like, "Hey, it's me from that one show." And you're like, "Oh my God."
Yeah. That's the one thing I missed, being way up front on the bike. I
right.
couldn't like
people
run into
weren't running
people.
Up to you. Yeah. Yeah. It was so great running into listeners as usual at the Dyke March. Equally as great running into past guests. That's also one of my favorite things because it's seeing people and also seeing how people are connected to each other. So I was meeting up first with Ariel Duham-Ross, who is a past guest, and her wife's boss girlfriend is Joanna Bradley, who is also a past guest. So I got to hang out with Joanna Bradley a little bit from our lesbian aesthetic episode. I walked for a while with Valerie Complex. It was her first Dyke March.
Really?
And then she just came off a Dyke boat party with recent past guest Mackenzie Lansing, came to the Dyke March, found a baby dyke in the crowd who was there by herself at her first Dyke March. Just fresh baby dyke, has never kissed a girl. Shout out to Jess, who's super cute. So if anybody is, you know, hanging around the Fordham campus, find Jess and give her a smooch.
My God. I just remember
so cute.
You say baby dyke, and I, as we talked about on Rachel McCartney's episode,
right,
heterosexuality. The Dyke March was when I called a friend a baby dyke, and she got so mad
out.
At me
yeah.
and screamed at me and cried. And that's actually the last time we spoke. So.
Well, this was a
watch
self
out with that term.
Identified baby dyke. Who else? So yeah, it was great to see Valerie, past guest Olivia Levine, Erica Rose, of course, from the Lesbian Bar Project, Gara Lawning of N Baby fame, who is also getting approached a lot and in a very N Baby crowd posse entourage.
You love to see it.
Going through the Dyke March. I did peep past guest Sarah Hollenquist of Dyke Beer, but didn't get to say hi because like those dykes get shuffled around so fast. It's very easy to lose each other. And then way back, one of our earlier guests, Marisol Brady, was there. So it was a lot of fun seeing everyone. And I know there were a lot more people that I wanted to run into. Who wanted to see, and the crowd is just is too big. It's so many dykes. Mm-hmm. Such a beautiful thing to see. We also were noting that it was at like a different energy than past years. Like in past years, I think we were all angrier because of Trump. And now we were just like a little bit more chill.
Yeah.
It was like, it felt like a very chill dyke march where before we were like marching, like we felt it in our knees. And this time it was just like a stroll down Fifth Avenue.
Right.
Just enjoying the company of dykes.
Jubilant.
Yeah.
The signs weren't as angry. I mean, literally, there'd be like drawings of Trump on. Like, it was good to.
Right.
We still have so much to be angry about, but like,
right.
To not have it all just. Focused in on that.
Right.
I don't say him, I say that.
I was a little sad that I think we're over Babadook at Pride.
Yeah,
I always
dumb.
Love a Babadook sign, but that's just
I didn't
me.
See one.
I know.
I did see
on
one
it.
Sign that said, "White dykes, do better." And everyone who passed it did a double take thinking it said like white dykes do it better, like
right.
like a proclamation of white dyke pride or like at the Black Dyke Power March.
I
so
feel like
funny. We need punctuation on our signs, people.
Yes, yes. I've seen that too last year at the Black Lives Matter that there were signs that white people were holding that was like, white people be better or whatever. And you're like,
they
ah!
sure do be better.
Like, yeah. Stop it. Rethink the sign. my favorite thing that I mentioned at our show last night was we passed by this like fancy bridal shop on Fifth Avenue and it's like four stories up. And the women working there were like waving to all the dykes. And then you see the bride to be trying on a dress. So she's got her like, full dress on, you know, they're all straight and they're like waving and going nuts. And then the crowd's going nuts back at them. And then the bride-to-be just starts like slapping on the glass. And it just kind of looked more like she was in this literal prison of heterosexual norms trying to get out instead of cheering us on.
I can't.
Like, there are two ways to take this. She's either really happy for us dykes or being like, get me the fuck out of here. I want to be down there with the lesbians. Get me out of this dress right now. That was so fun. And then our show, to go from that to our show at Good Judy, which was just all great vibes. So many listeners, so many people from our patron group, our patron Facebook group, which is so fun because I feel like we're all BFFs now. We all know each other. The comedy.
Everyone
the comics crushed. So good. Oh my gosh.
Everyone.
I was dying.
We
it was
objectified
so
them, sure.
Everyone.
We said they're all so hot. Get ready for these hot, sexually attractive comedians. But they delivered. Everyone was so fucking funny.
Yes.
I wish we taped it.
I know. I know. It was, what an incredible, magical night.
Yeah.
But I will have to say my gayest thing of the week might be what happened after the Good Judy show. And that's that one of my friends may or may not be going through a breakup right now and had texted me toward the end of the show and they live by the venue. And Cecilia and I were like, do you need us to come get you? And they said yes. So we are like a couple of gay moms. It almost felt like a kidnapping. We just stopped in front of the house and we were like, get in the back. And then we took her back to our house upstate. And it kind of reminds me of the movie Desert Hearts, where like there's a ranch in the desert for these like recently divorced women to kind of heal from their breakups. And I'm like, what if we become like the upstate hearts, a place for queers who are breaking up or having relationship problems and you just need to get away. And then they just come to our house upstate and just collect you.
Nice.
That's pretty good.
A lot more wholesome end of your night than mine.
Yeah. Our nights went and completely...
We splintered there.
I feel like both our days and our nights, like... that we started out with very different experiences of the Dyke March. We converged on stage at Good Judy's, and then we splintered off even more severely.
And I said, it's midnight. Let's start this night off. I was out until 5 a.m. Looking at my Fitbit right now. I've already clocked 18,000 steps. After I've done since I've woken up is walk from my bed to my desk. Danced the hardest I've ever danced. My God.
What does that even look like, Melody? Because I've seen you dance pretty hard.
No. You've actually have not seen me dance. If you think you saw me dance at the Lesbian Bar Project premiere, is that you're talking about?
Yeah.
This was like filthy, grinding, sweaty bodies, just grabbing a stranger and like humping, like just primal. I went to Poppy Juice, iconic circuit party at Elsewhere, like multiple floors, multiple DJs, just playing. It was like, not to brag, but I was dancing with a gay guy and he told me we had to stop because it was too much too real and he was getting aroused. So is that the gayest thing?
Yes, a fluid boner.
Yeah.
A very confused boner.
Confused
two
boner.
Two gay friends.
Yeah, that's it. I popped a confused boner, gayest thing of the week, for sure.
Yes, wow.
He pushed me off of him. He was like, no, that's too much.
Love it. That's so much fun. Wow, what a pride. And it's not even over yet. Today is official pride. You have a show tonight. You have two shows tonight.
Two shows tonight somehow.
Wow.
I love Pride. I am excited for it to end. I mean, I am exhausted. I have no serotonin left.
Right.
From my own social, all that, but also drugs. I mean, I gotta calm down, sit down, read a book, have some tea. It's too much.
Oh, man, it has been a lot. The one thing I didn't even mention to another possible gayest thing, I think, was my outfit yesterday,
that was extremely homo.
I wore a rainbow maxi dress with my signature leather vest on over it and pink shoes, and it was so gay. I've never worn a maxi dress before or worn a dress while hosting
show. Oh, I've never showed so much skin hosting or just in general. I was on a group
chat. You also
had
a fanny pack, which I love that you were hosting with
a fanny pack.
Loved it.
Forgot to take that off. I was on a group chat with all my gay friends. It's like half gay guys, half lesbians. We're all like, what are you wearing to Poppy Juice? What are you wearing? Everyone always turns out these looks. And I'm always showing up in like a t-shirt and jeans. And I was like, this year I'm going to actually do it. And I didn't have anything. I ran to Rainbow. I don't know what the span of Rainbow stores is across the country, but it's like a Dots. It's like a fast fashion. They don't even have changing rooms. It's like you're in, you're out.
Yeah.
You have 7 days to return if it doesn't fit when you go home. And just got like the thoughtiest dress I could find, just like a white denim, like form-fitting little number. My outfit was pretty straight compared to yours, but my friend said I have to start dressing this way now. We'll see.
Amazing.
We'll see.
That's great.
It was like a whole new personality. That's why I was dancing like so. It was the dress. Thank you, Rainbow.
I felt like my literal rainbow dress. There was something very 90s about wearing like a long maxi dress.
Literal rainbow on your
to the Dyke March.
I mean, we could go on.
I know. So much gay stuff. And believe it or not, there's even more gay content waiting for our patrons on Patreon. We do have our Dyking Off Topic episodes that we release every week. So if you want more content, go there. But I think now it's time to get into our topic for the week with our guests. Today, we are dyking out with lawyer, activist, and LGBTQ mentor Whit Washington about mature women. You know them. You love them. We love them. Whit is featured in the Lesbian Bar Project documentary, and we got to meet them at the premiere in person. Could not wait to dyke out with them. So let's get to it. Whit, thank you so much for being here and dyking out with us.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Whit.
Hey.
Good to see you. Glad we made this happen after meeting you IRL at the Lesbian Bar Project documentary screening just a short few weeks ago, right? Wow.
Time flies so fast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And we met you and we were like, we definitely need to have them on the podcast. And here we are making it happen. What a great
time. Look at us go. How's your June been?
My June has been great. My June has been wonderful. I got a sinus surgery last week, so I'm breathing better. My allergies are better, so I'm feeling on top of the world right now.
Oh, wow. Oh,
love it.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on having that done.
Thank
it's
you.
Good to make sure you're all cleared out for Pride Month so you can inhale and exhale all of that pride.
Exactly. I've been waiting to exhale, as it turns out.
Nice.
Love it.
Well, before we get into it, Whit, we have to ask, please regale us. What is the gayest thing you did this week?
The gayest thing I did this week was I went out the other night with my partner, and I have these like pink shorts, and they're like already kind of short, and I rolled them up to be even shorter. And I put on my like white slip-on Vans and like skidded about DC. And felt super flamboyantly gay the entire time.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Regardless of gender, shorts are in.
Yeah, I busted out my Vans too lately. Vans are a good gay shoe.
Yeah, right? My wife has rainbow Vans. Yeah.
Ooh, the like squares are rainbow?
Yeah, the checkered kind of rainbow.
Sick.
Yeah.
Nice.
That sounds pretty gay. I like seeing straight men being pressured into rolling up their shorts or wearing shorter shorts. And some are really embracing it and looking hot. And some are really very uncomfortable with this idea of short shorts coming back.
It's wild. It's so nice to have your legs out. Like, this is me. This is my world. I'm showing myself off.
Yes. And in the queer community, just showing off your body is a thing. So, So we'll count it. That is the gayest thing you did this week.
Yes.
And plus, you and your partner are such a hot couple.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can we make note?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to post a pic.
Yeah.
On social media. So everybody just understands the level we're talking about because it's pretty high. So Whit, we did meet you at the Lesbian Bar Project documentary screening. You are in the documentary, but you do not own or operate a lesbian bar. Why were you in it? Tell our listeners.
I was in it as a patron of a lesbian bar. Here in DC, we have a League of Her Own, Aloho, and I was a regular there. And after a super hectic time in my life, I went there for refuge. And that was where like this whole new iteration of my life sort of like kicked off. I met my partner there. I made a bunch of job connections there. That was where I first started using they, them pronouns and exploring my gender more. And so I was there as a testament to the importance of queer space.
Love it. And the work that you do for political activism and Ban the Box. So you're a lawyer.
Yes, I am a lawyer.
And you've been working to get these Ban the Box laws passed. And specifically, are you working on it in DC or is it like a wider network? Because I know it's happening across the country and in different places.
So I more generally work on issues affecting trans people and LGBTQ people in the criminal legal system. So like prisons, Ban the Box is a piece of that, like a bunch of different things. And that is like one of the facets of the things that I talk to folks about and work on addressing. With the CARES Act, there were a group of folks working to have them incorporate a bunch of different things to address the needs of formerly incarcerated people. And Ban the Box was one of those things because there are a lot of like limitations on what government programs people have access to if they have a felony conviction.
Mm. Yeah. Can you explain Ban the Box a little bit more?
I was going to say,
not familiar. Yeah. I'm assuming a lot of people.
Back it up a little. I mean, I was going to attempt and I knew I would. Definitely not sound eloquent about it. So could you please explain Ban the Box?
Totally. So Ban the Box is a movement to remove the requirement for people to report if they have a criminal conviction on a job application. And so there are a few cities and states that have human rights, employment right things around you can't not hire people if they have a criminal conviction. But for the most part, that's not available. And so people cannot be hired if they have a criminal conviction. And with the way that people are about convictions and like what a crime is and calling people criminals, it really has a negative impact on a group of people who are already like incredibly vulnerable in our society.
Right.
And so it's a movement to like open up the employment space.
I remember at a past job, I was hiring somebody who did check the box, and I found that it was kind of a little bit of an extraordinary situation, and it felt like that dominated then all of the talks and the interview process, all the decision making. It became this big thing that had to be talked about instead of focusing on what this person brings to the table, mm-hmm. what they can do. And I remember feeling like, wow, this really sucks that people have to disclose this, because then mm-hmm. It is like this cloud over their head that they feel like they have to explain away and not get judged. And then you have to explain to everybody else on their behalf and advocate and be like,
yeah,
they did their time and this can't be held against them forever. And,
right,
you know, people need to make a living. So,
yeah. And it's like one of like the drivers for committing crime is like not being able to access money. And
exactly.
So how does it make sense to say, oh, you committed a crime, now you can't make money, and also don't commit a crime and good luck.
Right.
It's like, vicious. What?
Yeah.
We got to ban a lot of boxes, actually, on job applications. There's a TikTok that went viral recently, and it was some American TikTok user talking about a job application, and they had to fill out their race. And the comments are just flooded with users from all over the country like, is this a joke? Is this for real? I'm genuinely confused. How is it legal to ask your race on a job application? I genuinely don't know if this is a bit, but...
Right.
It is. That's
there's also
what we
that
do.
Box that's like, do you suffer from any of the following conditions? And it's like anxiety,
right? Every
depression.
Single one. Yeah.
And I'm like, do I have
I've
to
never
disclose
been honest.
This? Right. I'm like, I'm not telling them that I'm anxious. What?
Like,
yeah.
This
yeah.
Seems like it's also like we're all anxious. Like, aren't we all kind of depressed and a little anxious? And haven't we all kind of committed crimes? Like,
right.
Right.
We.
Sure,
right,
I have.
What? I just haven't been caught for my felonies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a felon.
My mom is just slowly becoming an indignant white woman.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
No, my mom is an Iranian immigrant who settled in Connecticut, and it's only made her, she's slowly turning into a Karen. But anyways, on her job applications now, she's trying to find a job, and every time there's race, she just writes in all caps, human.
I love that
human?
For her.
Any other questions? So funny.
That's
ban
really
all the boxes. Yeah. Thank you for your work you're doing
yes.
for that specific
Truly.
One. All right.
Truly.
Shall we get into our topic?
Shall we dive in?
We're going to dive into our topic, which is mature women. And Whit proposed a bunch of different things. And this is one we've talked about here and there. We do have a Patreon episode way back in the archives, if you look on specifically the Golden Girls. But I think that there definitely is something with the love of older women, whether real or fictional, and the queer community.
Yes,
definitely.
What do you think that is? And why?
It's the freedom. You know, watching Golden Girls, they're in their 60s, they're roommates. Blanche is like out here fucking whoever she wants, living her
here.
Best life. Sophia is out here like making fun of people, yelling at people, being funny. Dorothy is cynical and dry and perfect. And Rose is just the most amazing human that ever existed. She reminds
yes.
me of my Nana. I think that's why I love
she
her so
She reminds
much.
Me of my grandma. Yes.
Yeah.
They kind of look alike and she, yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like it's part of that generation. But I love they're independent. They don't rely on anyone. And they just do exactly what they want. Like all they ever do is exactly what they want. And that is what I'm always trying to do in my life.
I love that answer.
The freedom. Yeah. I mean, so ahead of its time in so many ways, but especially with queerness. Like, it was built into the pilot when they had a gay man. I mean, there were, like, patriarchal reasons why he was built in. Apparently, the original concept for the Golden Girls was three women living together and a gay man in Florida. And then eventually, like, from the pilot, they kind of phased him out. His name was Coco, I believe, and he played sort of a butler kind of cook. And there are a bunch of reasons why he was phased out. It didn't make sense socioeconomically for them to have, like, a butler. Like, they're pretty middle class. But the reason he was put there in the first place, because it was such a pioneering show, they, you know, had three women, but they were like, is America really ready for a show that only centers on three women? So we need to throw in a man, but this man can't bring sexual tension into the house. So because they would eventually have, like, all the male suitors, and that right. would be a lot where their storylines would come from with men. But they totally had a gay guy, and I hate that he didn't make it past the pilot, really. I think it was just the pilot, but...
For sure. It's like gay math.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we incorporate this?
What's, like, the least threatening way to present something that's not white men?
Right.
what's palatable? But they do have queer stuff throughout the series, like when Dorothy has her lesbian friend come and stay, and that friend has a crush on Rose. That's such a great episode, and Rose is so oblivious and handles it great when she, you know, there's no crazy gay panic. Plus, mm-mm. Sophia makes really funny lesbian jokes that I think we can all laugh at.
It holds up.
It holds
up. And then Blanche gets pissed because she's not into her. She's like, I'm the hot one. Right. Why is she, like, not hitting on me? I am aggravated. She can't be gay. She's not attracted to me.
It's funny because there are so many shows, especially from the 90s, that don't hold up. But my wife has a bunch of comfort shows that are in her back pocket that she'll have on in the background while she's working, and Golden Girls is one of them. And it does hold up. There's very few things that you see that you're like, oh no, how uncomfortable to watch that today. It's like, no, they, like, this really makes sense for the context of all of this. There's the episode where Blanche's, is it her brother who's gay?
I think it's her brother. Yeah,
Blanche's brother is gay, and she has a problem with it, but it's dealt with in a way that's, like, very real, and, like, they explore the nuances of, like, you know, why would that upset Blanche, and, like, what's the real problem, and all that kind of stuff, and it's not just, like, a punchline, or it's not just something for ratings, even though it's a comedy, and it's a hilarious show, but they do a great job of exploring. And even with race too, there's the episode,
the Confederate flag episode.
Oh, sorry, I don't remember.
Oh my God, there's an episode where Don Cheadle guest stars.
That's right. And no, I do remember.
Yeah. There's, it's, like, so ahead of its time, and they have a really great breakdown of, you know, why it's wrong to fly that flag. And actually, last summer when the protests were really kicking up, I started to see that Golden Girls clip start to circulate the internet. It's like, we're learning from the Golden Girls in 2020.
Forever.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was also the episode, it's Dorothy's son.
Dorothy's son is dating
the older black woman. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're getting married. And then the black woman's mom and Dorothy are both kind of, like, united and not wanting it to happen, but there's also some contention there, and they talk through some uncomfortable topics about race and family, and this was
a Reagan era show, just
right?
tackling all of it. God, I love them.
Yeah,
that's I'm still thinking about your point about that. Yeah, that it's the freedom of them just being who they are, which would be appealing to people, especially when we're younger and maybe closeted and not feeling like we can be who we are. And then seeing these older women just be themselves and not give any shits. And I also wondered, I don't know, like, is this a thing? Do queer people have, like, closer relationships with their grandparents for that kind of same reason of, like, your grandparents are always feel a little bit more accepting of you?
I feel like there are so many queer people that are as obsessed with their grandmothers as I am, and it does feel like such a, like, whole thing. My grandmother was one of the last people that I came out to, and she was so pissed at me. She was like, you thought I was going to be upset? Like, you didn't trust me enough to, like, tell me? She was very upset with me, and we had, like, a whole conversation. I was like, I'm sorry, Nana, I don't know. She's like, yeah, well, get your life together. I was like, okay. Okay, Nana.
Yeah, I mean, I have a picture of my grandma, that I keep on my desk. She's no longer with us, but I keep it around me all the time. Like, I'm just obsessed. It was, like, one of the closest relationships I've ever had, and nothing could touch that. So I'm like, oh, is that why I love Golden Girls and actors like Angela Lansbury, you know?
She's divine.
Okay. I want to talk about Angela Lansbury and Murder, She Wrote, because I'd actually never seen Murder, She Wrote. And I love Angela Lansbury just from other things like Bedknobs and Broomsticks and MAME and just like other stuff that she's done. But I just, for whatever reason, never sat down to watch Murder, She Wrote. And I watched the pilot.
Last night?
Isn't it perfect?
I'm a little bit torn. Like, my wife was like, this was very relaxing to watch, and I want to watch more. This might be one of my new comfort shows. And it's so campy. But then also, I'm like, I don't know if it's the editing, or is Angela Lansbury a terrible actor? Like, everybody's a terrible actor on it, but, like, here I was thinking that Angela Lansbury was, like, this, like, pinnacle of, like, British theater, and then I'm like, what is this? What's happening here?
My favorite thing about the show is that her accent, which is a British accent, is supposed to be a Maine accent.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Wikipediaing. I'm like, where is she supposed to be from? Because she's talking weird, and it feels like she's doing that, like, trying to do that mid-Atlantic affluent, like
Jenna Maroney from 30 Rock.
But meets Maine, but has parents who are from England. So in the Wikipedia, I read that her family, like, the character's family is from Ireland. So I'm like, well, now this makes even less sense.
Right?
It's not even an Irish.
No, it is a non-accent. And she reps Maine so hard with that accent. And I love that clumsiness about it. You know, I like, that's the other piece that is, like, so comforting to me. It's just like, what? None of this makes sense. How is it that there are 12 seasons, 20 episodes in each season, and this woman runs into a murder in every single one?
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. And she's just a mystery writer.
Right.
But she, like, and my favorite thing is that in the first two seasons, people are like, oh, we've heard about how you've solved mysteries. She's like, oh, I'm just a mystery writer. Like, I'm not an investigator.
40 and cases after the first,
after the first two seasons, she's like, I'm a fucking investigator and I write awesome novels.
Right, right.
And I love that.
Okay. So those are the things I knew about, like, going into it. I knew it's Angela Lansbury, and I knew that she's this writer. But there is a weird amount of murders in Cabot Cove in Maine, where she lives. And then I'm surprised that I watched this 2-episode pilot and none of it takes place in Maine. And I'm like, I thought this was a show about Maine. And then at the end, sorry, spoiler alert, she figures out who the murderer is. And then she's like, darn it, I thought we had something here. well, let me take you to the police, but is like hugging him. And it's like, mm-hmm. oh, what a downer that you murdered two people.
What? He comes back. Preston comes back a few later.
Good.
He gets out of prison and he's like, I want to be your publisher again. Oh, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
I can't wait. I can't wait. I think my favorite part is just watching her jog for a really long time. She's like the original like Phoebe Buffay jogger. Yeah. Just like real loosey-goosey, not jogging on any path, just like straight up jogging through like shrubs. Like there's a clear unobstructed path and she's like, let me just jog right through this brush. Her body's just kind of going all over the place. And I'm like, is this why people like it? I know.
It's camp.
Nothing can contain her. Nothing. Not that little like towel that she has tucked into her tracksuit that she runs in. Right. Not the street, not the shrub. She said, I'm fucking out here and this is me. Welcome to me.
A gay icon.
Yeah.
She is.
Is it because she has this like masculine, feminine kind of balance in
That's
her character?
That's what I felt. Because, well, not even just Murder, She Wrote, but in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, when she enters, she's like on a motorcycle in like full on like leather. And she just like rolls up and is badass. And then she's like, I'm a witch. And then it's just like the queerest thing. She's just like this sassy witch. And it's so good. And I was so obsessed with her character and like the witchiness of it all. But also like the leather, the motorbike riding.
Where did you watch it, Carolyn? Is it like streaming on Netflix or something?
It's on Amazon, okay. But it's through IMDb TV, so you have to watch ads during it is the only...
Okay, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also on YouTube TV. It's on the Cozy channel. There's an episode at 7 and 8 every morning.
Love it.
We DVR it, and I will just sit here and watch Murder, She Wrote all day.
Yeah, because I'm used to watching it on channels like that I can just get with an antenna.
Yeah, it's the best. I've also been watching so many like life insurance commercials it's like DVR'd it's like the one I was watching this morning, it was like, I'm gonna die soon, but I'm okay because I've been paying like money for this life insurance and you won't have to pay for my funeral.
The soundtrack to my early 20s, my first job out of college was working for one of those channels, Antenna TV, retro programming and like scheduling those ads and just, it was really morbid stuff. We had to keep a master doc list, Excel sheet of all of our, you know, icons, leads from all these shows, like 50s, 60s, 70s sitcoms, and like when they were born, and it was very morbid, like when, like they might be dying soon. Like we would have to have like montages ready to go, like in memoriam.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, really morbid.
Yeah. I mean, I had to check on Angela Lansbury because I'm like, I know she's alive. And I know she's getting up there in age. She's 95. When they get that old, it makes me a little bit nervous. Also, Carol Channing was one who, she passed a few years ago. Here's my Carol Channing coasters that I have.
So good.
And yeah, I would just get really nervous every year and be like, oh no, is she gonna go? The loss of all the various Golden Girls.
Right.
That was too rough. And same thing with Betty White. We're all nervous.
I know.
Dame Maggie Smith.
I'm going to be a mess. Maggie Smith has looked the same age for the past 38 years.
Yeah, totally. Okay. She's 86. And Downton Abbey premiered, what, like 10 years ago, maybe? And in Downton Abbey, she looks like she's in her 90s. And I'm like, how is she only 86 now? Like,
in Secret Garden, she looks old. And that was like when I was a baby.
Yeah, I loved that movie so much.
Right.
Yeah, she went from just looking very young to like just being cast as the old woman. Like, and there was no.
In her 30s, she started getting cast as like 62.
Right, yeah. Right.
Another Capricorn queen. We have the same birthday.
Ooh.
Not necessary. Just had to say it.
Oh, love, love that. Love that.
It's so good.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
I mean, I was trying to think, too. I'm like, who are some of these older, iconic older women who aren't white? And that, like, have the same kind of feeling to them. I'm like, I don't, maybe they're not that many because, like, black women age so much better.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And just, we never just think of them that way because they're all looking, like, amazing into their 70s.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cecily Tyson
was the one that came to mind. And
an icon. Like, Angela Bassett isn't, how old is Angela Bassett and, like, Gloria Devine? Like, all those Waiting to Exhale ladies.
Yes. Yes. So, Loretta Devine.
62. Loretta Devine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Loretta Devine, I think, is 70 now. She was born in 49. So, yeah, Loretta Devine is 70. That was another one who came to mind, but she's still, like, she still just feels so young. Like, her energy is still, I don't know, maybe I haven't seen her in anything recently.
I've also realized that old age is so different now that I'm in my 30s. Like, I thought that 60 and 70 were old, but now that my parents are, like, in their 70s, and so looking at someone who's 60, it's like, oh, you're still out here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're still hella living, kicking it. You're probably retired. What a dream. Your kids are probably grown if you have them. You don't have to, like, pay for their stuff as much or at all anymore.
Right.
When my parents turned 60, they started going to, like, Italy all the time and just going on little trips and falling in love again. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be 60.
My parents moved recently to a retirement community down, like, South Carolina, Hilton Head area. And it's a lot of couples, in that age group who are just partying, like, they're swinging. They're having, like, my mom's like, my mom will hide from them. She's like, I can't do another Thirsty Thursday with these women.
Yeah. Well, and also, Wait, I don't know if you're into any of the Real Housewives franchises, but Melody did get me into Housewives, and that also completely shifted my thinking around older women, though that's a little tricky because they're rich, so they get all that plastic surgery, and then they look young.
Yeah,
like,
they
that's
looked
also
older
why they see
10 years ago. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I like my old woman to look old.
Right? You know who has aged beautifully?
Who?
Jennifer Lange.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen her in some years.
Yeah, yeah. Let me see. I haven't looked her up in a while.
I saw her in the American Horrors and I was like, oh, shit.
Yes.
I was like, old women are beautiful. Old women, they have a different air about them. They have a whole different confidence. And it's so attractive.
I mean, my mom is a babe. Like, I just can't get over it. Like, she looks amazing. She is
no comment.
In better shape than me. Carolyn's attracted to her sexually. It's like, yeah, it's comforting.
It made me think of, Cherry Jones, who's a lesbian, 64 years old, and... I was listening to an interview with her and Terry Gross, and she was talking about just like not getting any work done because somebody has to play those roles that that are older. there is something to like aging, like looking your age, like a Meryl Streep.
Ooh,
that I think we find very attractive, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And it's weird when actresses like do mad work and it's like your face is completely different. Like, I'm not saying you're not attractive. I'm just saying wow, you have a different face.
Yeah. I mean, that's
happy for you if that's what you want.
That's how I feel about Madonna. I'm like, I think Madonna would have aged so nicely and now she just looks weird and it's unfortunate because she had a really great face at one point and... like, just let it do its thing. But, you know, to each their own, whatever people want to do to feel good about themselves, who are we to judge? You know, we're talking about Murder, She Wrote, Golden Girls. Another one in that trifecta, I feel, is Designing Women, which I never watched. But Jean Smart is having a
little renaissance.
A little renaissance, yes, exactly. Between Mare of Easttown and Hacks and... the same thing. It's like people can't get enough of these older women, and especially, I think, queers. I mean.
Yeah, and Annie Potts, too. She's been in a few new things. She's such a gem. She was also in Any Day Now, which is another cozy TV.
Cozy.
I love cozy TV.
I love that you watch cozy. I haven't ever talked to someone who watches cozy. Someone else. Like, I really watch it via an antenna. Yeah. So good.
It's so good. It's like, what else do I want to watch? I feel like Quantum Leap is on there sometimes.
Yeah. It's what I was raised on, too, with my grandma. Like, my parents are immigrants. They would work all day. They would drop me with her. We would watch TV Land, like, all day. All I did was watch 50s sitcoms, 70s sitcoms. And then we would eventually have to change it for Wheel of Fortune and then all of the soap operas. But even the soap operas...
Which soap operas were you watching?
Days of Our Lives, As the World Turns.
Whoa, those are different networks. Right?
I know, we would switch, from CBS and NBC. Yeah.
Melody,
she wouldn't just do the NBC lineup.
How did I not know that you watched Days of Our Lives?
So much Days of Our Lives. I actually had a huge crush on
Hope?
One of the girls.
Was it Hope?
Was it? I just have to...
I had a big crush on Hope. I was like 15 and having sex dreams about Hope. It was, and then I'd have to write about it in my diary.
Oh,
like,
my God. Yeah, I was attracted to Hope, but Hope wasn't who I was thinking of, but I was attracted to Hope.
Okay.
She had blonde hair. Oh, it's going to bother me so much, but I watched a lot of soaps.
Sammy, was that her name?
Sorry.
We're so sorry. What?
It's important. This is important content.
Sammy, no.
All the folks who spent too much time with like old people. We were always watching General Hospital.
I'm
a big fan of General Hospital. I'll still watch it every once in a while, throw it on, and I feel like I still know what's happening, even though it's been 15 years between watches.
Yeah. I mean, I Dream of Jeannie, it was a sexual awakening for me. And
100%.
It's my grandma's fault. I wasn't allowed to come out to my grandma, too, before she passed. And I wanted to be like, really? Because it is, I mean, she accelerated it. She should know. Yeah. If she's upset.
She fostered it.
Yeah. It's her fault.
Okay, I just had to pull it up because I was obsessed also with Passion, speaking of soap operas.
Oh my God, everyone was very hot.
Passion.
Passions was like a sexier.
It was the, Passions soap. It was the insane one. It was the one that like jumped the shark so hard, like it walked so that Pretty Little Liars could run, I think.
I love that.
So it had Juliette Mills played this old witch, and that's Hayley Mills' sister, which Hayley Mills is like the original Parent Trap kid, and then she was Miss Bliss on Saved by the Bell, and I think
Miss
those are
Bliss.
Her only two things. So she probably has like a great career, but I just know her from the things of my childhood, which are Miss Bliss, and 60 years earlier when she did the Parent Trap. But yeah, her sister, Juliette Mills, that looks like her, was played a witch in Passions. And I was just, obsessed with like the old lady witch character and watched this horrible soap opera, partially.
It's like old folks and witches. Witchy shit is queer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It draws you in.
For sure. There's also, though, this thing of like, we expect older people to be more conservative or less able to like adapt to new ideas. So is it just that we love it when there's representation that's like contrary to that? Or like, I think very recently, a lot of people were bummed out by Rita Moreno, who is just like, I've been obsessed with her in One Day at a Time. She blows my mind with just like her talent. And then seeing that clip of her on Colbert, I was like, and she came back and apologized.
What did she do on Colbert? I completely missed this, by
okay,
the way.
So it had to do with In the Heights. And there was a lot of super valid criticism about In the Heights, not including Afro-Latinos. Yeah. As any of the main characters, when Washington Heights is like very much an Afro-Latino community. And she was like, do we have to criticize it? Like, leave Lin-Manuel alone. Like,
leave the boy alone.
Yeah, like leave him alone. And he's the one that, like, has given so many opportunities to people. And basically saying, like, you can't criticize it. But the worst part was she was like, just wait. And, like, eventually you'll have your turn, which is, like, a crazy thing to say in, like, 2021. And especially, like, given like all the conversations around casting that have been happening in the past like 10 years and stuff, that it just people were so let down and disappointed by someone who's such an icon. I think somebody explained it to her and she came out with a much better apology that shows that she, you know, hopefully understands why that was so bad.
Hectic.
I love that she's saying, just wait. She's like, isn't she 90?
Right?
It's like, how long have you been waiting and we're not there yet?
Right.
What?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for letting me know.
Yeah.
yeah.
Are you watching? Did you watch Grace and Frankie at all?
Of course.
Years? Okay.
Of course.
It's my shit.
Right?
I love that. I mean, there's obviously queerness in it, but like from the husbands, of course, from the jump, but like the queerness is in their relationship to me. Like Grace and Frankie themselves, I love them so much. I mean, we have Lily Tomlin representation finally.
Right.
Just Lily Tomlin representation.
Is Lily Tomlin queer at all in the show? I've only watched some of it.
Oh, no. She's straight in the show.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I feel like they're just sort of like generally there is something inherently queer about older, just like the idea of older single women.
Right.
Like that they're not connected to men. They don't like, they can, their gender can present and like they can sort of function as like a mask individual or a femme individual because they take up the whole space.
Yeah.
Which is so unlike women's space when you're younger and you're supposed to be whatever they're telling you to be. And then you get old and you're like, fuck you, I'm gonna live my life.
Yeah. And another thing related to that that I was thinking of that I didn't give much thought to, but about how a lot of people perceive that men, when they age and get older, they get softer. They get a little bit more in touch with their emotions. And that can be attributed to the decrease in testosterone that their body produces. And I wonder if the natural decrease in testosterone and estrogen in our bodies makes older people like ignore gender boundaries a little bit more. Is that a thing?
I feel like that could be a thing. I feel like it's also just the exhaustion. There's like so much, there's so much pressure all the time. Like, you're going to work, you have to dress this way, you have to talk this way, you can't lead, you have to lead. That by the time you get to be old, I've seen this in my mother a lot, actually. Like, there are a lot of things that when she was younger would stress her out and just like perpetually buzzing with like anxiety and stress. And now she just doesn't have the energy to stress out. And so she just, she's like stopped. She's gotten good at like setting boundaries all of a sudden.
Yes.
She's like really, she like understands that and is very good about it. And I feel like part of it is just from decades worth of, I can't, the pressure from all of this is too much and I'm finally just done.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful thing about aging, that it has that effect. There's a comedian, Jen Kirkman, who talks a lot about this, and Jen's in her 40s. I don't know exactly how old she is, but she talks about just how her 30s got so much better because she started to care less about what people thought. And then by the time she turned 40, she had no shits to give. And it was like the most freeing thing to like stop caring, because you're just tired. You're just tired of it all. And you're like, whatever, I'm not dealing with this anymore. Which can kind of go, it feels like that can go into two different ways of people not caring and just being like authentically themselves and being really cool, or of people not caring and being like PC bullshit, like, you know,
that's garbage, like, monsters.
The bad way. Yeah, that's not the right way to do it.
the crotchety angry
yeah,
folks.
Yeah.
With a jar of whiskey and like a shotgun on their porch.
Right.
That's what I picture.
Well, there's literally, I remember hearing this a year or two ago, the term age queer. Have you heard that?
Mm.
That sounds like kind of what we're talking about. It's like
age queer. I like
age queer. I remember reading something about this, and from like some queer publication, about like how it's basically like you're refusing to conform to the social constructs of age. And
yes,
yeah, it's a thing. Like, I'm age queer.
Yes,
I love that.
My wife
like
is
rejecting
age
the
sure.
like. So that binary would be like young and old. Then, and it's just just another binary that people are trying to abolish.
Right. So
I thought that was interesting.
I feel that. Yeah. I feel that deep.
Yeah.
Because I love to sit in and like watch Murder, She Wrote and Golden Girls, but also I'm like only 32, I guess.
Yeah. I'm hoping that we start to get past some of the shaming, specifically, I feel, of women who are older and act younger or try to act however they feel. Going back to Madonna, for example, ever since she turned 40, she was being screamed at to cover up her body, stop trying to dance like a young person, stop putting out dance music. And like so much of that shaming makes people feel like, oh, being old means acting a certain way. But then you have these examples like on TV, like we talk about Golden Girls. What was Designing Women about? I know they were in the South.
They were in the South. I think there was a set of sisters and they were like interior designers and they had like their one gay friend and they like dealt with the trials and tribulations of being like, they were probably in their 30s, right? Yeah, that seems about maybe 40s, maybe 50s. It's hard to say. Time is very confusing.
Golden Girls, their ages is also very confusing, let me say, especially with Sophia being Dorothy's mom. The math doesn't add up, especially when Sophia's younger than B.
than
Arthur.
All of them.
Yeah, than all of them.
They're queering age.
Really, because there's one episode where I'm like, how old are they supposed to be? Because I'm pretty sure Blanche is like 50, but then they're acting like it's really wild for her to be having sex in her 50s. Like she's, you know, the wild one. And I'm like, she's young. Like, they're all younger than my mom, except for Sophia, who's my mom's age. But my mom doesn't look like Sophia. My mom looks like Blanche. Like,
right?
Yeah.
That is the strangest. Like getting older and seeing what age is from a kidult perspective.
Right.
It's so wild to look at people like in their 20s and feel like that is very young, but also still feel like people in their 60s still aren't old.
Right.
It's like I feel wicked older than them, but these people don't seem that much older than me.
Right.
It is wild. I was telling Carolyn, I was at an open mic the other day and it's like, I don't know what it is. I think it was a lot of people in their 20s and a lot of their material was this anxious age stuff about like approaching 30, about dating. Like the punchline in one girl's joke was like the guy she was with, like she was building it up to set him up like he was such a loser. And then like the punchline was that his age was 34. It was like, granted, it's an open mic. It's not great. But like, it was all so age centric. And I was like, is it because they all came out of a pandemic and these like early 20s comics are like freaked out about this year and a half they lost. And
they're
like,
anxious because
really
they lost
hyper focused on
year.
That. Yeah. but it was wild. Yeah, I felt so much older than them, like decades older, when really it's like 5 years older than a lot of them.
Right.
It's really wild.
It is a crazy thing to be. I mean, I guess at any job you're in, you're working with people for the most part of different generations, different ages. But it's kind of like, well, the newer people with less experience are the younger people and then the older people. But in comedy, it flattens out a little bit where it's like people can start at any age. So I just go around assuming that people are more or less my age until they are like, who's Alanis Morissette? That's a throwback to our last week's episode. And then you're like, what? Like,
yeah.
Oh, sorry, we're from different planets.
I'm personally offended, actually.
Hit me in the chest, that one.
Or the episode that the non-binary episode we had with Gara Lawning, and they had no idea who the brat was.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh.
It's like, talk about a queer awakening.
Okay.
Like what? The brat?
Yeah.
I don't think is she queer?
Yes. Yes.
She is queer. Yeah.
But she like finally came out.
She finally,
took a while.
That was definitely a number one when I was younger though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's so funny getting older too and realizing those pieces, the like, looking up to people was sexual attraction, like learning what sexual attraction was and figuring out that was a whole thing.
Do you find yourself sexually attracted to older women?
Oh yeah.
Do you have any experience like with older women? Like what's the oldest woman you've been with?
I was dating a woman who is 9 years older than me. And that's like the most.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was really fun because I was like very much, she was like just getting out of the divorce. And I was very much her like little hot boy. And yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love just like being cute and being out here and being silly
yeah.
and being just like with a more mature woman who's like, we're doing this. We got this on lock.
Yeah.
Liz is 3 years older than me.
Okay.
But she's like in spirit. In spirit, I feel like I'm probably like a 13, 14 young man.
Okay.
And she's like a grown woman.
Love it.
That's like my gender. Because I am queering gender, that is
right.
Because I'm queering age, that is my queer age.
Yes. Love it. Yeah, I find that in theory, I'm always very attracted to older women. Like when you brought up Lily Tomlin, I'm just thinking I want just like a movie where she's just like fucking. Like I want to see like yeah. Lily Tomlin like having like a hot steamy affair with a younger woman. Like I would love that.
Yeah.
That would be topping. So hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just yes. Like like when I think of these older women, I'm like, oh yes, like I wish I had the chance, you know. But like in reality, that never materialized. Like when I was single, I think one time at a bar I was very drunk and made out with a woman who is probably 20 years older than me. But
I
like
love that.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I feel like it's such a dream because it is that like older, calm, like attraction of I am drawn to you like a moth to a flame of your holy in yourself.
And that is of them just being stunning in who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That is Jessica Lange is my number one. I think, I think she is my number. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, who would be my number one older woman? Melody, who is it? Who would I talk about? Other than Rosie O'Donnell.
I know, other than Rosie. You can't take mine, Jamie Lee.
Ooh.
That like imprinted on me. I mean, my first time masturbating was because of her striptease in True Lies. And then that like older women attraction only took off from there. But I always felt not as much as Carolyn. Carolyn, you're always talking about older women you're attracted to.
Who I am.
I'm trying to think of one example that's not my mom, please. I do think it's a sapiosexual thing, too. Do you think like more people who identify that way are generally attracted to older women?
Yeah, I think that whole
cut it out. Cut out what I just
said. No,
we're cutting it. We're cutting it. Okay.
I do think there's something to that. I mean, when we were talking to Diana Suhami, past guest, and I don't like talking about past guests like this, except for Desiree Akhavan. But I was thinking like if I were single and if she were interested, I would go home with this woman. Like she is so intellectual and it's charming the pants, and she's British. And the fact that she's just been like an out dyke for so long. Yes, please. Like there's something that's so attractive about that.
Yeah. I've been feeling it with Jean Smart in Hacks.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So the scene where.
What is Hacks? I don't know. Okay. Hacks.
Hacks is a new show on HBO Max. Jean Smart stars as this sort of like Joan Rivers, Mary Tyler Moore-esque comedian who has like this run in Vegas that's being threatened to end. She's trying to like prove her relevance. And it follows this like young comedy writer that's recently been like quote unquote canceled. And
really.
The only job she can get is like punching up jokes for this much older. So it like, that's a good show that focuses on age dynamics actually too. But there is a scene where the younger, like, Gen X character has a sex dream about Jean Smart.
I was so jealous of that. I was so jealous. I'm like, if I'm ever on a TV show, somebody please write me in making out with, like, an older woman.
Because she did get to the actress herself, got to make out with Jean Smart. And I was so jealous.
Right?
It's arousing.
My wife is so excited to age listening to it. She's probably listening and being like, you better be like pouncing on me when I hit 60. She's older than me, but not by that much.
Yeah. Allie's what? 3 years older than me too. Yeah.
I can't wait for Liz to age.
Yeah.
It's like I'm just like, this is perfect.
I know. Yeah. Allie sounds like Holly Hunter too, to begin with.
Her voice, yes.
Like,
for sure.
I'm just like, in my mind, Allie is going to be her, and I'm attracted to Holly Hunter. Like, I'm just like, I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I've already designated what she's going to look and sound and dress like.
You're already committed.
Yeah. Can't wait. Okay, I guess I am attracted to older women. On this podcast, been like, I guess I don't think I am, because I'm always comparing it to Carolyn's bigger thirst for older women. Mm-hmm. But this conversation has made me realize that
Judith Light.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
Count it.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
She's aged well.
And I don't know how. I don't think she's like that old, but Juliana Margulies.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like another. She looks great.
Another, I've seen her in person. Ugh. I'm telling you.
What?
Very, like, probably one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in person.
Oh, my God.
Damn.
Like, the entire time, my mind was just, like, I couldn't comprehend how gorgeous this human looked. I'm like, why? It was like seeing a different species of person. I'm not kidding. She was wearing like this like emerald color and like that with her. I don't know. I was almost in a coma. It was nuts. Juliana Margulies for sure.
Wait, so are we just going to do our honorable mentions that
yes,
you didn't mentions. Get out yet? Okay, let's go. Sigourney Weaver, Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton. What
Sally
a good
Field.
One.
Susan Sarandon.
Mary yes. Steenburgen.
Gina Davis. Speaking of A League of Their Own. Yes.
Right.
Christine Baranski. Hot. Is she in her 60s? She looks great. Love her style, the way she dresses. The Good Wife, all that. She looks great in that.
Right. Gillian Anderson.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Have y'all watched Sex Ed? Have y'all seen that show?
I love that show. I haven't seen the latest season, but yeah, I love it. I wish I had it when I was younger. So good.
Right. It's great.
There's just so much TV that sometimes I get started on something and then I get easily distracted. But
right.
Yeah.
That's why I always come back to Murder, She Wrote. It's like I get very overwhelmed of I don't know what to watch. I can't think of what to put on. So I like to start with season 2, episode 1, usually.
Okay. Yes.
That's one of my favorite episodes. And Murder Takes the Bus. That's with Rue McClanahan.
Oh my gosh.
She's actually in that episode.
I love it.
So I love
perfect.
I love that one too.
In the pilot, Stan is the bus driver in one short scene. Stan from Golden Girls.
Yeah.
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 So there's like a lot of crossover with the actors. Yeah.
With everything. And also the actors are recycled through the show. Mm-hmm. So it's like one person will probably have like 38 credits from different episodes throughout the series, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're always meeting new people who are the same person. It's like when I was younger, I used to love doing like celebrity maps. So like give me two random celebrities and I'll connect them. And I was so good because of how many different people have been on Murder, She Wrote.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Michelle Pfeiffer is a good one too.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Jodie Foster is also a classic.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. I mean, Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman was one of my roots. And actually I was just hanging out with some friends, one of them's an actor and he was on a shoot in Atlanta and got to act with Michelle Pfeiffer and said she's awesome, like an awesome person. So that's always, I love to hear it. Love to hear that these people are cool IRL or else it really bums you out.
Are there any like butch older
Cherry Jones
that were, yeah. I'm trying. I just want some butch representation, and I'm like, okay, Jane Lynch, a little,
mm-hmm. yeah, Jane Lynch and Rosie. Rosie's having a comeback. Yeah,
she mm-hmm. sure is.
She is. Yeah. I'm so happy for her.
Yes. Ugh, obsessed.
Yeah, we know this.
Is there anything left we have to say about mature women before we wrap up?
They are the bee's knees. They're everything that you need.
Yeah. Yes.
Stay great.
Yeah. You know.
Stay golden.
Stay golden.
It's affirming.
Yeah.
It's affirming that I can, that I'm right. And I can like be free in the same way that they are.
Yeah.
And it's a comfort show that has a nostalgic feel, but it's with a group of women that are still so ahead of you in age mm-hmm. that it, I don't know. Most things I watch that are comfort shows that I watch for nostalgic purposes are, you know, tween kind of shows or things I enjoyed when I was younger that centered around younger people. I love that I can keep going back to Golden Girls and have dynamics to look forward to, if that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yes, I think it gives you optimism about the future that sometimes, because getting old does have such a bad rap, and then you have these things to remind you of, like, your best years are always ahead of you, and age is just a number, mm-hmm. and you're only as old as you feel. So I guess we'll end it there. Whit, where can people find you? Do you want them to follow you on social media? How can they get involved in the causes you care about? What do you want our listeners to do? You tell them.
Yeah, folks can follow me on Instagram. My handle is boysquire. I have a website, Whit Washington Esquire, and folks can reach out to me if they would like someone to come and speak to them or a group of people about the criminal legal system, how LGBTQ people fit into that. And also, if people want to get involved in supporting people, there's an organization called Black and Pink, and you can sign up to be a pen pal with an LGBTQ person in prison. And that's,
I love that.
Yeah, it means a lot to folks. You know, there are a lot of folks on the inside who like don't have folks on the outside because they came out or whatever sort of circumstances. And it's really lovely to talk to folks who like need to talk to someone.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm going to sign up.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I
love that.
Cool.
That's so great. Whit, thank you so much. It was so great to talk about this stuff with you. And we can't wait to come down to DC and hang out.
It's happening.
IRL yeah. again. Yeah.
Yeah. You and Joe and Rach and the gang.
Yeah. We're gonna have the gang's all here.
As You Are Bar. Hang for sure.
Great. Wonderful.
Thanks, Whit.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank y'all.
Well, thank you, Whit, for being a friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
Oh, yeah. Petition to replace the Golden Girls theme with that viral YouTube of that guy doing his rendition. You've seen it, right?
Yes, yes,
okay,
yes.
Okay. Shall we get into our listener question?
We shall.
This one's for you, girl, and it is from a patron. So we did just get it in, and it went to the top of the list. Let's get into it. How is building your family going, Carolyn?
Yes.
You mentioned on the pod, I think about a year ago, about you and Cecilia having a baby, and I want to know, how's it going? Can you get into the details about IVF, hormones, eggs, and donors? How did you decide what to do? And are both you and Cecilia looking to birth a child?
Wow. Yes. I'm happy to talk about this, though this is probably like a lot more information and a longer thing that maybe we can get into.
Ooh, like on a whole episode.
A whole episode or an off topic about it. But I do realize that there was a time where I was talking a lot about IVF and then all of a sudden I wasn't. And some yeah. people might want to know. What happened? And I haven't been talking about it because we kind of did pause the process a little bit. So two things happen. was that, I mean, during the pandemic was when we were getting our eggs retrieved, and Cecilia's second egg retrieval led to an infection, we believe, and that infection had her in and out of the hospital during the summer, and then she had to get a surgery that was kind of related to IVF stuff to remove a cyst, and then that re-triggered the infection, and then that led to like 3 weeks in the hospital, an emergency surgery, getting her fallopian tubes removed, just a lot of stuff, being on an IV full of antibiotics, being allergic to those antibiotics and having a reaction. It was a really crazy time. And her doctor recommended that she no longer have egg retrievals done, but said that she can still carry. So the clock is ticking. We have one embryo right now that's frozen, and it's up to me for any future embryos getting made. So I am hoping to start up the process soon of going on hormones and everything. I didn't get many eggs out. There are a bunch of things that you can do to try to increase the number of healthy eggs that you produce. So I have to get back into that. It was all disrupted when we decided to get a house, and the stress and all the things that had to be taken care of and doing that made it really hard for me to be on a regimen of a strict diet plus taking all these supplements every day and doing all the things that you should do to make your body healthy. Instead, I was just like in a hotel eating Cheetos 3 times a day. And yeah, living the dream, actually. I'll look back and think fondly on those hotel Cheeto binges. So, yeah, in terms of donor, we decided to go with a known donor. It's a friend of mine who donated his sperm. We probably need him to jerk off one last time for us. He's done it a couple times. And once I get my next egg retrieval done, hopefully in the fall, then we'll try the next step and get those embryos into Cecilia. And if it doesn't take, then maybe I'll try to get pregnant. I would love to avoid being pregnant. I'm not shy about expressing how much I do not want to be pregnant, but I will if I have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at, I think.
Yeah, it's hard enough to function in this world as a human without being pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, wait, you want me to add pregnancy on top of it? You want me to add another human inside of me? That's intense. It's a little overwhelming, but I love Cecilia a lot. And if we need to do it, I will do it. But like I said, clock is ticking. We're not getting any
younger. The biological one?
Yes. Tick,
sure
tick.
Is.
Yeah. It's crazy. So that's where it's at. And we can talk about it in more detail on another episode. And maybe I'm sure there are guests who have more interesting stories and stuff related to that. But it is a lot of decisions and discussions that you have to have in regards to all the steps of going about it. And it's also, you know, fortunately, we have insurance through Cecilia's job that covers it. Most people don't. And that sucks. And that makes it really, really tough. And we've also thought about adoption, but that's also tough. I know straight couples who've been trying to adopt for 3 years and they don't have a kid yet. So it's all very, you know, competitive, which is weird because so many kids need homes.
Homes, yes.
Right. We have friends. We actually went to the birthday party of a family friend. I don't know if anybody watched any of the queer Blue's Clues content this year, but Blue's Clues was hitting it out of the park for Pride to make kids with gay parents feel included in Pride. And they had a video, like a male segment, and they had these videos of these families, and one is a family that we know. And Ella is Cecilia's drawing buddy. They have drawing dates every week where they Zoom with each other and do art together. And it was her birthday. So we went to see her, and she's adopted and has two dads. And just like seeing their family and their story and everything. And it was so cute going to their house. Oh my gosh. It was our first time there.
I saw the pictures on your stories. It's so cute.
Oh my God. She's so cute. She panicked, I guess, before we got there and wanted to do an outfit change and put on like her most sparkly sequined dress. She painted Cecilia's nails. And we were having fun. She was showing off her bedroom and all her stuff. She had just chopped a board in karate that day. So she showed us the board that she chopped. She was turning 7. But her dads, they're just such proud dads. And it's beautiful to see. And they had the dress that she was wearing when they brought her home, like up on the house.
Or,
yeah. Like, on display. And like all this stuff from like around the adoption and all these like beautiful stories about just like how much they wanted the adoption to happen. And like, I don't know. It was so beautiful and so heartwarming. And man, just like let gay people be parents. They're so great.
Yeah.
The love that these guys have for her, it's a beautiful thing. So anyway, if you have a listener question, it can be a deeply personal question about the things going on in either of our lives, or it could be a general question about the stuff you're going through, or it can be about anything, and we'll do our best to answer it. Send it to dykingout@gmail.com, and you can follow us online at Dyking Out everywhere. You guys know the drill, but if you're not following us on Instagram, don't be mad when you're not getting tickets to our shows. I don't know if there's a way to like be like, always give me notifications from here, because a lot of you were upset.
You can turn on post notifications.
Yeah, it got sold out. So our shows, now that things are back up and running, they used to sell out before. I think they're going to be selling out quicker now. We only have, you know, more listeners than we did pre-pandemic. So it's going to get a little competitive there. And we would love to see you all and make you laugh and have our amazing friends and past guests of the podcast make you laugh, because they are crushing it. And also the audience is crushing it because
such a good crowd.
As always, whenever we have these shows, the comics come up to us after and they say, that was a lot more fun than I thought it would be, because lesbians are known to sometimes be buzzkills as an audience, and our crowds are always there to have a good time, and we love you for it. You can follow me at TGI Carolyn, and for pictures of bikes on bikes,
you know where to go. Melody Kamali on all social media, but def peep the Instagram for those pics.
You need to pin those, have that be like a highlight story on your thing, because those are such good.
Yeah,
posts.
I will. I have actually a lot more.
Yes.
You can only post so much on one post. I'll make a like stories highlight. I just, yeah, I truly, it was one of the best days of my life.
I love it.
It was so
much
fun.
It was a great day. It was so much fun, Melody. And it was so great for us to do our first, even though we weren't together at the Dyke March, but to have our first like in-person Pride event together. So things are looking up, guys.
They're happening.
Thank you all for listening, and
we'll see you next Tuesday, baby.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's H-Y-P-E-R-T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L. T-H-E-T-I-C-A-L.